and welcome to Cross Currents. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Coming up on today's show, Response, help for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. Their mission is to support, educate, and empower survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. Today's guests, Chel Pedregosa, she's the program director at Response, Linda Consuegra, she's the assistant chief of police in Aspen, and Danielle Madrill, a police officer with the Aspen Police Department. When we discuss the fact that this is Sexual Violence Awareness Month.
Sexual assault.
I was saying, is it Domestic Violence Awareness Month or sexual, and you say it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Can you give an explanation of the difference? Domestic violence is in the home, but can sexual assault occur also in the home?
Yes, it can.
Well, in domestic violence, really, it doesn't have to be in the home, but it really is with an intimate partner.
Domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So then how do you distinguish between sexual assault and domestic violence? When someone isn't known to the victim?
Not necessarily. You can still be raped by your spouse. So if you did not give consent for a sexual act, then that's a sex assault.
And domestic violence.
And could be considered domestic violence, too.
If they're involved in an intimate relationship.
Is that the definition, then, of domestic violence? It's easier, I guess, to define domestic violence than it is.
It is, yes. So domestic violence is going to be between two people who are in an intimate relationship.
And it can be, the woman can be the assaulter.
The man could
be the assault victim.
Yes, it could be either way.
And same with sexual assault from time to time, though rare, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it could happen, but mostly, as the statistics would show, that is mostly male assaulting females.
The statistics that I found are 1 in 10 women are raped by an intimate partner sometime during their lifetime.
So of the 10 victims, 10% are people that are known to the victim.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say also that there is it's not only between a man and a woman and a woman and a man. We have seen cases of 2 men and 2 women, some same-sex sexual assaults. And I would say that sexual assault is any unwanted sexual conduct and non-consensual sexual conduct, not only rape,
but even grabbing of
mm-hmm.
a body.
It's sexual violence. Mm-hmm.
What's the outreach that you do during this month to try to explain to people like me that don't mm-hmm. necessarily understand what it?
Well, we started sending a newsletter that we made coincide with this month, and it's going to be quarterly. But our first issue was this month. And we run a campaign in the newspaper that we called Men Up. And it was, I don't know if people have seen it, but it's a few men in the community in a picture, some known names too, in a picture together, and basically saying men up against sexual assault. And it's a question not only for women. It's not women who have to protect themselves from sexual assault. It's also the responsibility of the males out there to prevent and outreach, educate their sons and daughters. But I often hear that we put all the weight in the women to be careful what you wear, be careful of what you do, be careful of how much you drink, be careful of how you present yourself, what you wear. If you're very nice, you're very close. Mm-hmm. That means some things that, you know, you might be looking for it. So that's a message we send our daughters, kind of, and sons.
Danielle, I want to go back to something that you said, just to be really clear. When you said 1 in 10 victims know their assailant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the statistic, if you have it, of how many women out of 100, or the percentage of women in the United States that are or will be sometime in their life assaulted? Do you know that?
Well, if I understand your question, 91% of the victims of rape and sexual assault are female, 9% are male. Or we could word that as 1 in 5 women will be raped at some point in their life, mm-hmm. and 1 in 71 men. And, you know, I think males tend to not report, so we don't want to leave males out of that number, maybe skewed a little. Some men feel societal pressure to be proud of early sexual activity. Maybe it was unwanted. Regardless of whether it was wanted or not.
Isn't that interesting?
It is very interesting.
And in general, I think it's underreported. Mm-hmm. In general, for
male
and female.
Last time you were here, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the victim gets blamed. It's just the way the system works, right?
Yeah.
That people are unwilling or reluctant to come forward because of the difficulty in prosecution, the difficulty in getting a good outcome.
Yeah, I think if you look at the process even from start to finish, you know, you look at a victim and immediately, at least when I've worked with victims, there's self-blame, there's shame. I mean, who wants to stand up in front of the whole community and say, yes, this happened to me? And more than likely, people are going to stand up and start questioning, well, what were they doing so this happened to them? Instead of, you know, focusing on the person who is the perpetrator and focus, it take that full focus to them. And so then you also have, how do you tell people? How do you tell your friends, your family? And then it goes into also, if you end up in court and what's going to happen there? You know, defense attorney is going to question your sexual, your past history. I mean, who wants to go through that? And it's a tough process, let alone the healing as well for those victims. So it's not going to be a lot of them that are going to be raising their hand and saying, yep, I want to report and go through this whole process.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are Chell Pedregosa. She's the program director of Response, a 501c3, which provides help for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. Linda Consuegra, the assistant chief of police, and Danielle Madrill, a police officer with the Aspen Police Department. So regionally, at least in this valley, the numbers of reports, anyway, is pretty stable.
Yes, we had, I believe last year, we had about 6 reported sexual assaults. And then we also had some unlawful sexual contact.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like? What's unlawful sexual conduct?
That's basically, and I can let probably Danielle explain it a little bit better. But basically, it's just any unlawful sexual contact. It could be contacts of any of your private parts, or even outside of clothing. So it's just basically
brushing
it's the touching
inappropriately against somebody.
Yes.
In workplace, yeah. Sometimes
could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's so the way that it's defined by a Colorado statute is unlawful sexual contact is when an actor knowingly subjects a victim to any sexual contact, any unwanted sexual contact. And that could also include a victim who's physically or mentally incapable of consenting.
Boy, how does that get reported then?
I think that's a little bit more difficult. You need
a caregiver.
You need a caregiver.
And the mm-hmm. victims can actually have a conversation with their caregiver where they're not even realizing what happened. But once it's said, then the caregiver might go, that doesn't sound right. I actually had, in the beginning of my career, I had one. And it was, you know, just the victim really sharing what happened. And then the caregiver brought them to the police station.
How about nationally? How are we trending? Up, down, or the same as far as assaults reported?
Actually, we're down.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that we might be down in reporting, but I don't think we're down in what's happening. Like, they might not be reported, but it's still happening. We've seen an increase of 5% this first quarter of sexual assault clients in our organization, as opposed to last year.
At Response.
At Response, yeah. And we have some, a lot, like some of the people don't want to report, although I would encourage everybody to try to do it or try to talk to us about it, because there's different ways to report this crime, and we collaborate with Aspen Police Department, and they're great about.
What percent of the people who report are repeat victims, people who are stuck in cycles of violence? And
actually, they do show that if a child is sexually abused, then their chances of being abused as an adult, is the percentages are way higher.
Well, I'm finding that the majority of clients that we see that are survivors of domestic violence or come to our office with a domestic violence issue have been sexually assaulted by their partners, meaning that they had been forced or to have sexual relationships with them. So it's very common because it's all in sort of a package when they come. It's hard to, you know, try to drive him to the police and say, you need to report the sexual assault only. It depends on the client. Often they just want to be safe and have this the offender just go away or get away from them. And they don't want a lot of trouble. They're super traumatized, and we're trying to empower them by giving them some individual therapy. We also offer a free support group for people that have been through trauma, sexual assault, domestic violence, or any kind of trauma that happens every week. And we just give them options and have them decide what they want to do. We meet them where they are, or, you know, we don't push them to do something they don't want to do, like reporting or just having a protection order or going to police and or not, you know. It starts by little, and then, and some people come and they are like ready. They want to go to the police and they just want.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are Chell Pedregosa. She's the program director of Response, a 501c3, which provides help for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. Linda Consuegra, the assistant chief of police, and Danielle Madrill, a police officer with the Aspen Police Department. Danielle, you mentioned that history is often a indicator. How much does, if any, does alcohol or substance abuse play a role in reports of sexual assault?
Alcohol and any kind of substance abuse is often a part of these types of cases, but we see in this job and police work that we see alcohol substance abuse in almost all of the calls that we take. I mean, it definitely plays a role.
And there's some sexual assaults, and we're talking, about rape right now, I guess. There's some component of alcohol and substance abuse, and there's some that they don't have it. I would say that I agree with Danielle. I mean, definitely alcohol and substance abuse escalates things and doesn't make it better. But it's not like an excuse for that behavior. I think it's intentional. We always think that's intentional, and it's planned. The offender knows what they're doing.
And can you explain to the listener, because this is really an important piece, that my understanding that sexual assault, rape, is not about sex. It's about power.
Exactly. It's about power and control. And no, it's not about sex. It's not about it's not a consensual act. So it's not about sex. We're not like sex, enjoyable, enthusiastic, yes, sex is one thing, and that's consent. And when there's not an enthusiastic yes, and verbalized yes, it's not consensual. So it's a crime. It's something that you don't want the other person to do to you. And you should also be conscious about asking people. I mean, we are all about empowering, fun, sex, and just sex that's shared within two people, that is consensual, but we also want to prevent the non-consensual sex to happen, and therefore the sexual assault.
And that no, yes can become no.
Yes so can become no. Yeah. I can.
Change
someone
your mind.
You can change your mind within minutes, you know.
Do you do any outreach to kids?
We do at Response, and we do to freshmen. We do a presentation on sexual assault. And we're trying to work on one for, the year before college, more focus on the campus and college sexual assault. But yeah, we do, and we have a lot of good responses from it. And this year, this school year so far, we presented to 950 something students from Aspen and Basalt, and they all get like a package, right? They get healthy relationships. But we start like throwing the consent word out there, right? And then they go with teen dating abuse and gender stereotypes and media literacy. And they end with the fun sexual assault presentation, which is, you know. But it's like it's trying to tell them, sex is not bad. But yes is yes. And only that is consent.
Chell, we were talking the other day about a really neat skit that you can watch. It's about tea.
It's about a cup of tea. It tells you like how simple it is to understand when someone says no. It's like if someone doesn't want a cup of tea, but they have one cup of tea like a minute before, but they say no now, it doesn't mean, you know, they want another cup of tea. So it's like if you, at the end of the video, it says it's as simple as tea.
If you're still struggling with consent, just imagine instead of initiating sex, you're making them a cup of tea. You say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they go, oh my God, yes, I would love a cup of tea. Thank you. Then you know they want a cup of tea. If you say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they're like, I'm not really sure. Then you could make them a cup of tea or not, but be aware they might not drink it. And if they don't drink it, then, and this is the important part, don't make them drink it. Just because you made it doesn't mean you are entitled to watch them drink it. And if they say no thank you, then don't make them tea at all. Just don't make them tea. Don't make them drink tea. Don't get annoyed at them for not wanting tea. They just don't want tea, okay? They might say, yes, please. That's kind of you. And then when the tea arrives, they actually don't want the tea at all. Sure, that's kind of annoying as you've gone to all the effort of making the tea, but they remain under no obligation to drink the tea. They did want tea, now they don't. Some people change their mind in the time that it takes to boil the kettle, brew the tea, and add the milk. And it's okay for people to change their mind. And you are still not entitled to watch them drink it. And if they're unconscious, don't make them tea. Unconscious people don't want tea. And they can't answer the question, do you want tea? Because they're unconscious. Okay, maybe they were conscious when you asked them if they wanted tea. And they said yes. But in the time it took you to boil the kettle, brew the tea, and add the milk, they are now unconscious. You should just put the tea down. Make sure the unconscious person is safe. And this is the important part again. Don't make them drink the tea. They said yes then, sure, but unconscious people don't want tea. If someone said yes to tea, started drinking it, and then passed out before they'd finished it, don't keep on pouring it down their throat. Take the tea away. Make sure they're safe, because unconscious people don't want tea. Trust me on this. If someone said yes to tea around your house last Saturday, that doesn't mean they want you to make them tea all the time. They don't want you to come around to their place unexpectedly and make them tea and force them to drink it, going, but you wanted tea last week. Or to wake up to find you pouring tea down their throat, going, but you wanted tea last night. But if you can understand how completely ludicrous it is to force people to have tea when they don't want tea, and you're able to understand when people don't want tea, then how hard is it to understand it when it comes to sex? Whether it's tea or sex, consent is everything. And on that note, I'm going to go make myself a cup of tea.
I would say it's never too early to teach kids about their bodies and about consent. Like, I think we push kids to do things that they don't want to do. Like, here's your uncle, and maybe the uncle is wonderful. Just give a kiss to your uncle. Give me a kiss. And we all know, if mom's here, that sometimes kids don't want to kiss you, not because they don't love you, it's just they don't want to. So just respect them when they say, you know, when, you know, they say no to something, no to having a hug from a family member or us or whomever. Their body is their body. And that's something that I think I encourage parents to tell their kids, that the kid is the owner of their own body.
I think it has to start at home. I think it's important to be at home and really have an open communication about safety, body safety, and also, you know, to be respectful and to no means no, yes means yes. Riverbridge actually offers a 10-tip class for parents, and they do an amazing job. I don't know if you're familiar with Riverbridge, and they actually do a great job and try to get parents educated from, you know, when you become a parent, and just start really talking to your children about body safety and just making them aware, and also for them to be comfortable to talk about their body and their safety. And then as they get older, you know, the conversations are going to be opened up, and they can come to you with questions instead of with each other, with their friends, or maybe experimenting instead of talking to the parents. So I think it really comes back to the home and to the parents to have those open conversations with their kids.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are Chel Pedregosa. She's the program director of Response, a 501c3, which provides help for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. Linda Consuegra, the Assistant Chief of Police, and Danielle Madrill, a police officer with the Aspen Police Department.
I mean, it's one thing to talk about safety. I always try to make reference to, you know, here in Aspen, people leave their doors open. People leave their vehicle door open. Is it okay for someone to go into their home and burglarize the home, damage the home, steal something because the door was open?
I think we get a lot of messages in media. That's why we do the media literacy and gender stereotypes in high school, of like, I know you want it. That song, that was, you know, a bunch of guys just saying to a woman that I know you want it. It was not a bad song, but the message was horrible.
Right.
And
you know, there's been unfortunate tragedies that we've had in our community because of people being under the influence of alcohol, you know, and walking on the street and getting, you know, killed, or, you know, I mean, things can happen, but it's two different things. I mean, one thing is that, yes, you drank too much and you might be unsafe to get home, but who gives the right, just because someone is that intoxicated, that instead of helping them, they take advantage of them? So it's two separate conversations I think we need to have. It's like, you know, and I'm sure when we talk to, you know, seniors going into college, I mean, I remember in college, if I saw my friends that they were having too much to drink, I would stop and be like, okay, someone needs to be in charge now. Again, we're focusing because it's so much easier to try to find an excuse of why did it happen, because no one can be as bad as that person, that perpetrator, to really come in, think about it, think about the actions of what they're gonna do, and take advantage of someone. Because that's bad. That's like, who wants to think about that person?
And you mentioned this at the very beginning, Chel, that it's not just us women that have to help each other, but men too.
And I actually have an interesting case that happened over the winter. And I, when you were talking about, you know, whose job is it? I think it's a community job. It's everyone's job. We actually had a couple in Rafta that they saw a female being picked up and taken into a bus. And this couple looked at each other and they went,
doesn't look right.
And you know what? It might be their sister. It might be their girlfriend. But I want to make sure that this girl gets home safe. And they called us. And as soon as the police got there and they went and contacted the female who was extremely intoxicated and almost passed out, everyone raised their arms and said, she's not with me. And they got the female out of the bus.
So there had been bad intentions.
We don't know, right? And so again, why not stand up? If you know when you see something that doesn't fit the picture, or even if it fits a little bit of the picture, you do not lose anything by contacting the police, security, and saying, you know what? I'm looking at something. It doesn't look right. It might be right. I just want to make sure. And it's okay to do that. So even if someone might come to us with something that you're like, okay, well, we still go forward and try to figure out what's going on. And we do it in a professional way that we're not going to make the other person also feel uneasy or offended, you know? So it's just speak up.
Listen to your intuition.
One thing that I really would like to emphasize that response does is that they are there to help. Response is not required when victims of sexual assault come or when victims of domestic violence come in to get help. They're not required to notify us. They're not mandatory reporters. And that is very important for the community to understand. And the reason why is because the most important thing for any victim, and that's any victim, sexual assault, domestic violence, any type of crime, is to reach for help and to deal with the emotions that they have and the traumas that they have or the assistance that they're asking about and the services that they could be provided with. So it's very important for them to understand that go to response. If you're not going to be reporting it to the police department, at least reach out, get some help, and that's the start. And then if they want help, then they'll send them our way and we'll help in any way that we can.
Chel Pedregosa. She's the program director of Response, a 501c3, which provides help for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. Linda Consuegra, the assistant chief of police, and Danielle Madrill, a police officer with the Aspen Police Department. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.